My name is Roni Balkan. I am an Israeli dissident. I stand up to everything that the Zionist race state is about. So I'm anti-Zionist in every bone. I grew up there and left Palestine about a decade ago in order to focus on doing activism outside in order to change the situation inside.
What was it about your life in Israel that you felt that you had to become like almost like a full-time, well, I wouldn't say full-time, but you know, to dedicate yourself to fighting your own government?
Yeah, first of all, I was a full-time activist while I was there. I also was working in IT at the same time, but that was more of a hobby as far as I was concerned. So my main efforts and everything that I did was in order to abolish apartheid and basically abolish the Zionist race state in order to bring about a better future for all the sons and daughters of that land. Israel is a criminal entity from its very beginning. It is based on racial supremacy, apartheid, ultranationalism, all of the above. Obviously, it's a settler colonialist project and on. Being among the privileged group, being among those who stand to supposedly benefit from that horrendous system that was put in place 75 years ago, I felt the need to speak up and to act against it, just like the handful of conscientious white people in South Africa who stood with the black people in the struggle, the white people who stood up against slavery in the U.S. and so on. I was a conscientious objector to military service. My story is a little complicated because I got drafted and then I decided to leave the army, but I never actually acted as a soldier throughout that time. Supported other conscientious objectors, participated in direct actions with Anarchists Against the Wall, being invited by local communities in the West Bank to demonstrate, to take direct action and demonstrate on a weekly basis against the annexation wall that was taking away their land and basically caging them up in Bantustans and so on.
Can we get onto this knotty topic of religion? Because a lot of this seems to be, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, religion is responsible for all these wars. To what extent do you think religion is causing this, or is it just an excuse?
Zero. There's absolutely no connection whatsoever between religion and the Zionist system of domination, oppression, and terror against the indigenous Palestinian people. It is very convenient for that Zionist state to make it, to try to make it into a religious conflict. They would love for us to be discussing that rather than the actual issues. First of all, Zionism has precisely nothing to do with Judaism. If anything, Zionism is fundamentally anti-Jewish. It is anti-Semitic in itself. And any and all conflation, I am opposed to any and all conflation between criminal supremacist Zionism and Judaism, which is a religion. Any such conflation is in itself anti-Semitic. It is saying that all Jews, because of their Jewishness, whatever that means, all Jews are somehow criminal supremacist Zionists, is just like saying that all Muslims are terrorists. It's the exact same thing. So any Israeli official who says that if you are critical of that racist apartheid state, the Zionist state, you must also be somehow anti-Semitic, the very logic of that statement says that if you are Jewish, then because of your Jewishness, you must be necessarily, inherently, supportive of that criminal enterprise. And that is the most racist, the most anti-Semitic thing that you can say.
So, Ronnie, you were involved in this action at the end of last year. It was on trial beginning of this year, part of the Elbit 7. Can you tell us what happened and what happened in the trial?
Yes. So, exactly 2 years ago, actually, on Nakba Day of 2022, we are just about to mark Nakba Day of 2024. Which is a very, very important day, the most important day to remember as far as Palestine is concerned. So on Nakba Day of 2022, We went and smashed up the Elbit Systems headquarters in Bristol. Nine of us got arrested at the time, but these were two separate actions. Two were doing a lock on outside. Seven of us went to actually smash up the place and went inside into the facility and remained there for a couple of hours. We were later arrested. It was the first time that actually Palestine Action activists were also sent to prison. We were held on remand while the other five of the seven were held for a week. Two of us, who also happened to be Israeli dissidents, Stavit Sinai and myself, were actually held on remand for a whole month. And once we were finally released from prison, from the Bristol prison, we were actually, this was conditioned on being released and being on tag under house arrest for a whole year. So we have been, Stav and myself, we have been under house arrest. I spent the year in Brighton, even though I'm not a UK citizen or resident. I don't belong here, but nonetheless, I couldn't leave this island. So I had to endure the Jubilee and the, you know, rotation of the royals and whatever, but and to see the downfall of this political system, basically to witness it myself. But in any case, I spent a year in Brighton under house arrest. More recently, last January, we had finally, 2 years later, we had the trial for our action. We basically had the jury from hell, if I may say so, who seemed intent on convicting us from the get-go, and this is exactly what they did. They unanimously convicted us within 2 hours of deliberation or no deliberation. But the judge was much more reasonable and attentive, and he decided eventually during the sentencing to give us a suspended sentence. The trial itself was actually, you know, basically we were explaining everything that's wrong. Well, not everything that's wrong with Elbit, because that would have been much longer than a 1 month trial to explain everything that's wrong with Elbit. But Elbit is a genocidal company that is not only building, producing its weapons, which have been battle tested, which have been tried out on the bodies of Palestinians, and then they sell these battle-tested weapons to the rest of the world, including to the most despotic and genocidal regimes around the world, including to Nazi groups and so on. But not only that, Elbit themselves have been on the ground with the Israeli soldiers carrying out these crimes. For example, the Hermes 900, which is their flagship drone, UAV. In 2014, it was a premature drone that was introduced to the war scene, what's called the war scene in Gaza, during the massacre of 2014, dubbed as Protective Edge. That premature drone basically was every takeoff and every landing throughout the 51-day assault on Gaza, and for a whole year later, every takeoff and every landing was done by Elbit personnel on the ground alongside with the Israeli Air Force pilots, drone pilots, who were sitting next to them and dropping the bombs on the people of Gaza, where 551 children were massacred and were killed. 89 families, entire families, were liquidated, including, if you remember, the four Bakr boys on the beach. That was only the second day of that operation, Protective Edge, four kids arrived on the beach, and basically they were shot at with two missiles from two Elbit drones. The two missiles were 30 seconds apart. One child was killed during the first shooting, and then the rest fled, fleeing for their lives. They were hunted down along the beach, and the second missile killed the rest.
Well, look, I mean, we had Elbit Systems, sounds as if they're involved, last week. Bizarre. that Somerset Council actually said they're going to evict Elbit, but then a couple of days later they apologised because Elbit said, actually, none of these have been used in Gaza at all.
Yeah, only that they are lying through their teeth, and I have the proof for it. I've been collecting evidence for at least the year that I was under house arrest, showing the multiple connections. I have multiple proofs for to show that Elbit is dead wrong in its false accusations that there is no connection between Elbit Systems UK and Elbit Israel. But let's start with the basics. The profits of Elbit Systems UK go to Israel because this is a wholly owned. This is wholly owned by Israel. I mean, this is what is happening in the UK is simply the Israeli operations in the UK of Elbit Systems Israel. As Tzipi Chotoveli, the Israeli ambassador to the UK, she when she attended the inauguration of the newly opened site in Bristol, they built a new facility, a big one. She clearly stated that this was an Israeli factory which produces all these wonderful technology of murder for the Israeli army. Also, the UK ambassador to Israel was present in that inauguration of that facility. And obviously, the president and CEO of Elbit Systems Israel, who also happens to be a director of Elbit Systems UK, surprise, surprise. He's not the only one. You have usually a majority of Israeli high-ranking Elbit Systems Israel officials who are directors of the Elbit UK subsideries. You have, you know, in UK engines, in Impact, etc.
Yeah, as an Israeli yourself, could you give us some insight into the mindset behind the current genocide? We're looking now at 40,000 plus civilians have been killed, and the idea seems to be to bulldoze Gaza either until the Palestinians there have left, if they can get out, or else literally to kill them all. I mean, what's the mindset behind? Well, how do they think? What's inside these people's heads?
The mindset is simple. It is Zionism. Zionism is not only a racist, nationalistic ideology and practice. Fundamental to the Zionist thinking, all Zionists with no exception, fundamental to the Zionist thinking and definitely fundamental to the Zionist project in Palestine is the notion of exclusivity, that this place is ours and only ours. And that only element, that exclusivity part, means that any and all Palestinians are regarded as a threat or a problem that has to be dealt with. So the Zionist project in Palestine is not only about usurping the land and the resources of the land and so on. It is first and foremost about creating a race state, a state for one and only one type of people. So the whole question of not only about how much land is being controlled, but who are the people that are allowed to live on that land. The honest Zionists, the ones who are racist and proud of it, and they're also the majority in Israel and also the acting government, they say things like, I can quote, for example, from the Speaker of the Knesset, from previous, the former Speaker of Knesset, for example, who said, what is the difference? He said that, and I'll send you the video, he said, what is the difference between Gaza and Jaffa, which is one of the oldest cities in the world, which was occupied in 1948, what is the difference between Gaza and Jaffa? Both are Jewish cities on the Mediterranean. The only difference is 19 years between 48 and 67. That's all. And he says, whatever we did to Jaffa, we have to do to Gaza. We have to take it over. We have to clear it up and resettle it with us, Ubermensch, us super beings.
What about this the accusation? You actually hear it, I think, possibly more over in Israel itself than in the UK, about connections between Zionism and the Nazis.
Oh yeah, there were clear connections. I mean, more, quite a few actually. But the most notable was the transfer agreement. The transfer agreement in a nutshell, I mean, I can go on and on about it, but people are welcome to go on Wikipedia even and find out a whole lot about it. And there's books written about it. The transfer agreement was basically, there was a successful Jewish boycott of Nazi Germany. It was done mostly by U.S. American Jews. If people are familiar with articles at the time, and there was the famous article where it says Judea declares war on Nazi Germany or something like that, or on Germany without the word Nazi. So anyway, there was a successful boycott of Jews against Nazi Germany at the time. That was so successful that the Nazis were concerned about it. So what did they do? They offered the Zionist Federation in Germany a deal. In exchange for breaking the boycott, which they were happy to do because they were Zionists, they did not care much about other things. In exchange for breaking the boycott, they were offered the ability to basically get folks basically sent, get permits to move to Palestine to settle that land. And not only that they broke the quite successful global boycott against Nazi Germany, also those Jews who basically were allowed to leave to Palestine, they had to basically deposit their funds, their money, and they deposited a lot of money in the Reichsbank in Germany, and they got it back in commodities in Palestine. So they were actively helping the Nazi war machine when it needed the funding the most.
Yeah, it sounds pretty treacherous to me, but I mean, it's almost as if nowadays, oh, the Nazis don't matter because things have moved on. Anyway, look, what about Benjamin Netanyahu specifically? Because I think it's quite interesting to get your view about what you think his political future is. There's actually been some big demonstrations on the streets in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, etc., over in Israel, against Netanyahu, saying he's got to go.
So I've been to Palestine after my house arrest, where I was not allowed to travel. I then traveled once I was allowed to. I went to see my family in Palestine, also known as Israel. And I was there actually twice, both in June and last time in August. So before the recent events in Gaza unfolded. And when I was there, there were these demonstrations against Netanyahu, all these self-proclaimed leftists with their fascist flags, waving. I mean, it was packed with these fascist Zionist flags. And they were demonstrating against Netanyahu because he is basically, according to them, basically harming what they call Israeli democracy. And basically pulling the rug from under their feet, or basically making Israel, changing the whole character of the state of Israel according to them. Actually, the only difference between those demonstrating against Netanyahu and his fascist right-wing government is that while Netanyahu and his government speak the honest racist discourse, those self-proclaimed leftists, and there are no leftists in Israel unless the handful of anti-Zionists, anyone who's a Zionist is necessarily opposed to the ideas of equality and rights of minorities and multiculturalism. This is fundamental to Zionism. So those self-proclaimed leftists, they feel they are in effect actually more racist than Netanyahu. They need to make sure that they are the majority in order to feel that they are being democratic and liberal. So first and foremost, they are concerned all the time, 24/7, about the issue of demographics. How many of us versus how many of them exist on that land? And as long as they can control all the others, deny them rights, keep them caged in different ways, deny the majority of Palestinians even the right to come back to their homeland. Okay, the majority of Palestinians, we have to remember, have been ethnically cleansed in 1948, and to this day are denied the right to come back home for one and only one reason: for the crime of having the wrong ethnicity, for being born into the wrong ethnicity. This is their crime, and that is why they are denied the right to come back home. Those so-called leftists are dependent on denying them the right to come back home, are dependent on keeping people in Gaza and the West Bank caged, keeping all of those others denying rights of Palestinians throughout the land. And then once they do all of that, they can feel that they live in a vibrant democracy. So the change, the shift between the so-called left and the right is just basically how do we deal with the situation? How do we best control the others, the unwanted others, while the so-called liberals, so-called Democrats have one way of going about it. And this is also why they want to have two states in order to have as many of the others on the other side of the border. So they want to rid themselves of as many of the others and put them in another thing that they will call a state or an autonomy or whatever. This is one version. The other version is the Netanyahu version, which says we are the masters of the land. We will dictate. Anyone who agrees to be subjugated will remain. Anyone obviously remain in with very little to no rights. And anyone who stands up against that will be forcefully expelled from here. So these are the two options. So, you know,
one
type of Zionist. Sorry, I'll just finish. One type of Zionist want the entire land with as few Arabs as possible, and the more liberal among them, they want a smaller piece of the land as long as it is Arab free.
So, but the question is, can Netanyahu survive this?
I don't care about Israeli politics. It's absolutely irrelevant to the question of Palestinians and Palestinian rights. The one, other than being a conscientious objector and refusing to serve in the army, the even more important thing than refusing to serve in the army is refusing to participate in the sham apartheid parliament. The entire parliament in Israel, every single part about it, including the Palestinian members of Knesset there, every part about it is about maintaining and perpetuating apartheid and now also genocide. So it doesn't matter which government is in power. It doesn't matter if it's Netanyahu or Tzipi Livni, who was contender at the past, and I mentioned her on purpose now, or Benny Gantz or any of the others, or Shimon Peres, who was the most dangerous person in the Middle East until he passed away. All of those have offered the exact same thing to the Palestinians, which is...
Well, I think, you know, we can see a similar thing going on in British politics where, you know, be careful what you wish for to get rid of a particular politician, because someone even worse is waiting in the wings.
There is some basis which is eroding, but they are eroding that basis. But there is some basis on which we can build on here in the UK. There is no basis of equality. It is illegal to have a basis of equality in the Zionist state. If I wanted to establish a party that demands then the democratization of that state, I will not even be able to run for elections.
No.
The basic
law, well, I mean, there are other ways of shutting people out of elections here. But look, let's just get on to this latest case. And that is a report in the Bristol Post. I see pro-Palestinian group were arrested in an overnight Bristol raid. 9 people taken into custody on suspicion of conspiracy to cause criminal damage. And that was April 24th and 25th overnight. Police have confirmed. Actually, Palestine Action say 15 people had been taken into custody. Now, the extraordinary thing about this, Ronnie, is that they hadn't actually done anything. And in fact, they may not have done anything at all. They were in the process of potentially planning an action which may not have even taken place. And yet they're all arrested. So I can remember, I'm old enough to remember back in 1996, the Trident Plowshares. This was an action against British aerospace with some women where I was living in Oxford. And they managed to get into BAE, disable a whole bunch of these Hawk aircraft, which were going out to the Indonesians, I think it was. But anyway, I mean, the point is, they were actually exonerated by the courts. And this seems like we've come right to the other end of the spectrum. Now, you're not only not allowed to use preventing a greater crime in your defense, but you're also going to be arrested before you've even decided to do something.
Exactly. So first of all, I'd like to extend my thanks to Plowshares and everyone else. I mean, as an activist in Palestine, also known as Israel, I have taken inspiration from these folks. And I remember following that case. Now, yes, I mean, the defenses are being ruled out, but even more than that, Let's start with this kind of arrest that happened recently of the nine. First of all, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't involved and I don't know much about it. But from the little that I do know, I know that there were quite a few people, elderly folks there, who got arrested. And also there were two accredited journalists, basically people with press cards. One is a filmmaker, another is a photographer. They were also arrested, even though they showed their press cards. And I don't think that anything of significance was found by the tens of police, armed police, that showed up to arrest people. I think that they got some paint, and that's pretty much it. So, I mean, that is kind of outrageous in itself, like this preemptive arrest, you know, like they preemptively arrest people, who are maybe questioning the monarchy or anything like that, just for daring to think that way. But we have to remember that the UK has carried out an orchestrated crackdown against freedom of expression, political organizing, and definitely standing up to crimes against humanity, including apartheid and most importantly now genocide. In 2011, in the UK, they have removed international jurisdiction. We could have taken Israeli criminals to court, theoretically, or have them arrested in the UK until 2011. But specifically in order to protect Israeli war criminals, following the massacre of 2009, also known as Castled, which was orchestrated by someone called Tzipi Livni and a few others. So Livni and the others could not show up in the UK because of fear of arrest. Based on that, then Foreign Minister Hagi and also the UK ambassador to Israel basically told these people, Livni and others, that they will change the law. And this is exactly what they did. In 2011, they changed the law, removing international jurisdiction, and immediately notified those Israeli war criminals that they are now again welcome to visit. The first one to try this out was Tzipi Livni herself in 2011. She arrived here. Immediately an arrest warrant was issued by Daniel Machover, son of Moshe Machover, and former Israeli anti-Zionist who founded Matzpen, the anti-Zionist group at the time. Mr. Machover filed an arrest warrant. It landed in the hands of Sir Keir Starmer, who was the head of the public prosecution at the time. And Starmer decided to he had the power based on that changed law. He decided not to follow up on the arrest warrant and instead changed the status and lent impunity to Livni. Livni carried on in 2014 to orchestrate another massacre in Gaza, Protective Edge, which I mentioned before, where 551 children were murdered. And the same Tzipi Livni was also more recently elected as director of Elbit Systems. This is all not surprising. Other than that, the UK has removed defenses in the law. As we know, the very important Colson statue trial, where people were acquitted for removing the statue of the slave trader Colson in Bristol. Based on that, there was an appeal to the court by the Attorney General, which basically led to the removal of some of the defenses. Ever since, they have been removing more defenses. So we ended up having very few defenses in the law and in our possession or being available to us when we eventually were taken to trial just recently in January in order to basically explain why we took action in order to avert basically this genocide that is happening as we speak. I mean,
okay, but look, Rodney, it's a very important principle here, and this doesn't matter, you know, who you are or what you are. A jury will understand and see this. If you can see someone with a machete about to chop off the head of a baby and you shoot them, so maybe you don't even kill them, maybe you just bring them to the ground so they can't do what they were about to do, a jury is going to find in your favour. Surely this is the same principle, really, that's going on at Elbit, where by stopping these arms going to Israel, you're saving people from a genocide.
Absolutely. And when I stood there giving testimony in trial, I said several things, including that this is the worst I told you so moment that I could think of, because at the time, 2022, there were horrible things happening in Gaza and the West Bank, but obviously not to the extent that we are seeing right now being live streamed. And at the same time that we had the trial, there was another much more important trial in The Hague, the ICJ hearing about Israel, which we have been referring to during our trial in Bristol. So everything that is happening right now is exactly what we have tried to avoid, to avert. Elbit is the most important element in the ongoing genocide. There is no element other than the soldiers themselves that is so responsible for this ongoing genocide. It is not only producing the most part of the weaponry that's being used by the Israeli armed forces. It is actively participating in these crimes. And the Elbit president and CEO himself, just a few weeks after the genocide started, he issued this video thanking the Elbit employees who have been working around the clock, who are crucial. This is a direct quote, who are crucial to the operation in Gaza. And he wanted to extend the direct thanks and appreciation from the Israeli Minister of Defense to all Elbit employees. This also includes the Elbit employees here in the UK.
So what are the lessons from all of this? Do you think it's feasible to stop this genocide, or is it just going to carry on like one of George Orwell's endless wars?
I am optimistic after all. I'm optimistic even though this is an absolutely unbearable price that is being paid by Palestinians. And there are no words. So there were no words to describe the horrors of Gaza before October. And certainly there are no words to describe the situation that has been unfolding since. But the one thing that I am optimistic about is that this was a watershed moment. Things will not be the same. And the standing of Israel, the status of that criminal apartheid state and all of its accomplices, including the UK, which has a massive role in this ongoing genocide, will not be the same. They will not, especially when we are discussing the crime of crimes, the crime of genocide. By law, the UK will not be able to carry on with business as usual with Israel. They will not be able, because it would be illegal for them, as much as they want to protect Tzipi Livni and others, they will not be able to do so any longer the more the time progresses. And at the same time, we see that unlike the governments of this part of the world, and specifically the government of the UK, the people in this country are very, very different than their complicit and corrupt government. The people of this country are basically taking all sorts of creative actions, from massive demonstrations in London and elsewhere to taking direct actions, as Palestine Action is doing over and over again. Just yesterday, there was yet another action. Another drone factory was smashed up in Leicester. And the Fire Brigade Union issued a statement saying, we will not intervene. We respect the rights of those demonstrators to express their dissent and to express their views in solidarity with the Palestinians. So even going as far as the Fire Brigade Union, I have a lot of hope from all of these people listening right now to stand up to their government and stand up in support of the people who need it the most. Just like my grandmother who survived Auschwitz-Birkenau. If someone could have taken action against the factory that was producing, the IG Farben factory that was producing the Cyclone B, that has killed a large part of her family, my grandmother's family, and many, many others, of course. If someone could have taken action against that factory producing that poisonous gas, I would have only respect and admiration to those people. just as I have respect and admiration to every single one who goes to smash up an Elbit factory or stands up on the street with their children calling for the end of this genocide. And this genocide will see an end, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Finally, one of the words we don't really see on the news, although I hear it a lot around where I live here in Bristol, is evil. Even some of my Muslim neighbours have been saying this is satanic. What do you make of the this idea that actually there is something really particularly, it's not just about oil or just, not just about land or money, something even deeper and more evil may be going on?
I think that Nazism is not a unique phenomenon. We were told, as Israelis, you know, being indoctrinated in Israel, we were told that the Holocaust is unique and Nazism is a unique phenomenon and so on. No, it's not. It's a human trait, an unfortunate human trait. And we are seeing it in full-fledged, whatever, like in full view right now among Israeli society, among pretty much every aspect of Israeli society. Now, the Zionist society, the Israeli society, I used to regard it as either a cult. Zionism is either a cult or a form of a mental disorder. And I think that looking at it as a form of a mental disorder has never been more relevant than today. Because when you see what Israeli soldiers are boasting about and what Israeli society thinks, including, by the way, also members of my own family in part, you know, they genuinely believe that they are the victims in this story. And that is, yes, you could say that there are evil elements here, but mostly it is a totally deranged society. Now, I have no hopes from Israeli society. That is exactly why I operate abroad in order to bring about a change there. I operate outside in order to change the situation inside. But in any case, even if they were not mentally deranged, no privileged group will renounce its privileges of its own accord. Apartheid people in South Africa did not wake up one day and say, ah, apartheid is bad, let's end it. Slavery did not end because the slave owners decided to end it. It ended because there was an uproar, because there was a struggle, and because the time was right to end it. And the same will also happen in this case. I don't think that there is, every one of us, every human being can be from a Satan to a saint, okay, if you want to look at it in these terms. And we just have to encourage people to take action and to take conscientious actions, to really deeply evaluate every step on the way and choose the right type of action, including smashing up an arms factory when needed. And I'm absolutely proud of doing that, and doing that along with a wonderful group of people. Each and every one of them is an amazing person, and you know, I have all respect to them.
Is there a good place to follow? We report quite a lot on Plus 972 magazine from Israel, but where are good places to follow, including obviously Palestine Action has got its own Twitter account, hasn't it?
Yeah, so I would unfollow Plus 972 magazine. I mentioned the so-called left in Israel, and 972 is unfortunately part of that in the most part. The greatest tool of Zionist propaganda is Haaretz newspaper, the so-called critical newspaper, so-called liberal lefty newspaper. This is the greatest threat to Palestinians and Palestinian rights, other than obviously those who are bombing Palestinians. But the greatest threat are those who speak this discourse that lends an aura of legitimacy to what Israel is doing and what Israel stands for. Starting off with simple things like using the term Israeli democracy, which is a laughable term. There is no democracy, not an iota of democracy, and never was. It was founded on the exact opposite of democratic values. As I mentioned, the exact opposite of equality, multiculturalism, and rights of minorities. There is it couldn't be any less democratic even if it tried, the Zionist state. Same goes with terms like Israel and Palestine. There is no Israel and Palestine. That's a lie. That's an act of Zionist propaganda. Israel is Palestine. These are the exact same spots of land. The story of Gaza did not start in October of 2023. It did not start with a siege of Gaza. It did not even start with the occupation in 67. It started in 48. Gaza was built as a refugee camp to house the unwanted, the surplus humans who were ethnically cleansed in 1948 in order to build a race state for one and only one type of people. Ever since, they have been caged there, living in a concentration camp, which more recently has been transformed into an extermination camp. And I'm choosing my words very, very carefully.
Yeah, well, look, a lot of these terms you're using, you're quite right, are propaganda terms. We're getting them in many, many places. But where is there anywhere good that you would suggest that people can follow to get a little bit more deeper perspective?
Of course, but none of them exist in Israel, other than if you want to follow the work of some organizations like Zohot, which is about the Nakba, and Decolonizer, which is also about the Nakba, and obviously some Palestinian organizations like Badil. But if you want to get the news, I cannot think of a single news outlet in which is quote unquote an Israeli outlet that is even remotely not full of Zionist propaganda.
Okay, what about around the rest of the world?
I would recommend warmheartedly recommend following Electronic Intifada for news and analysis, including up to date news. They have ongoing live streams on the matter.
And also, of course, the Palestine Action Twitter feed.
Yes, of course. Palestine Action definitely is worth following and participating in if you can, or supporting in other ways. There's always a need to support Palestine Action. Some people take action on the ground. Others offer support in different ways, both financially and otherwise. There was a wonderful person who opened her house to me, a complete stranger, and gave me a home for a whole year while I was under house arrest, and I'm very, very appreciative of that.
Amazing. Okay, well, anyway, Ronnie Barkan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.